Hi, this is Dr. Tom Rogers at Performance Medicine, coming to you with a weekly podcast that I call the Common Sense MD. Now, today, I have back one of my former guests, Dr. Chip Backus, who worked emergency room for 22 years and has been in addiction medicine for how many, 15?
Just over 15 so years now.
This guy, crazy. He looks too young. There's no way.
Flying
he can,
by.
There's no way he can practice that long. But
yeah, listen to you.
but anyway, he's a good friend, and we had a good discussion on addiction medicine in one of the past podcasts. But today, I really wanted to get him back to talk about alcohol. You know, we've talked in the past a little bit about alcoholism, and if you follow a lot of podcasts like I do and study a lot about medicine, you know that alcohol really is not a great thing. As fact, if you listen to Huberman Lab, Dr. Huberman at Stanford does a deep dive on a lot of things, and one of them is alcohol. And he says there's not one positive thing that comes out of alcohol, and yet everybody. Most people drink, especially these days, it seems like. But, you know, it can lead to problems. And alcoholism is something that we need to talk about because I think a lot of people have a problem that they don't even realize they have a problem with it. And as we were talking about with opiates and all, alcoholism is a brain disorder, isn't it?
Right. Genetic brain disorder. It's a mess up in the whole rewards motivation system of our brain, which is kind of just above our upper brainstem. So, yeah, it's exactly it. It sort of feeds off of what we were created for to survive and thrive in life with eating and, you know, drinking fluids and staying healthy with getting outside and, of course, carrying on our generations with, you know, sexual experiences, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it just gets out of control, and that's what happens is it causes those neurotransmitters to be released from that area, and it changes the way the amygdala takes on that emotion with, hey, this feels really good. It works well for me. I need to keep doing this. So
because it relaxes them, gets them social, and everybody knows that. I mean, everybody's had wine and it relax. You talk more and you feel good, but a lot of people just can't handle it.
That's right. Well, I think that one of the biggest things, too, is it's accepted so much. You know, it's kind of like cigarettes have come. When you look at cigarette problem, we treat that as well. But it's usually people who have a problem with cigarettes admit they have a problem, at least. Alcohol is a little different, you know. Mm-hmm. And I guess because it causes them to relax. It causes people to be able to be social when they wouldn't be, to do things they wouldn't do normally and make them more comfortable. But it's still accepted. And I think that's what leads to the further problem.
Do you think that, again, I agree with you, alcoholism is a genetic brain disorder? Mm. I know from personal experience with some of my distant relatives that they had a problem with it. One of them didn't take his first drink until he was 40 years old and became an alcoholic, lost the family money, and it was
that
just a terrible situation.
Yeah, that says a lot itself about the genetics of it or the
and
severity.
Then, after that happened, 7 out of his 8 children became alcoholics.
Wow.
The only one that didn't.
You have your own study that you've looked at. Yeah,
that's, the only one that didn't was my father, who was a teetotaler. He knew that if he drank, he was very susceptible to that. So he didn't drink at all. Mm-hmm. So, and these were highly functioning people. I don't want to get into specifics, but highly functioning people. We all know physicians and lawyers and accountants are actually alcoholics.
Yeah. A lot of them are. You're right. Yeah. And other stuff, right?
Yeah.
But you're right. What's crazy is that you can function and still do a really good service and job while having an addiction like that.
How do you know when you are an alcoholic, you know, or at least have an alcohol use disorder? I guess that's a more better way of putting it. But what are some clues that you may have a problem?
Yeah, that's a good question. So really the first thing is if you're drinking more than 15 drinks a week as a male, then you're considered to have a problem. It's 7 to 8 as a female, you know, and again, that just has to do with, you know, body sizes and, you know, fat distributions and so forth.
So two drinks a day for a man, one for a woman, any more than that, you may have a problem.
Right. And I tell you, I'm with you. I think if you're drinking every day, even if it's two drinks and it's under, or it's one drink, if it's under that limit, it's still, to me, you're susceptible to have a problem. I mean, that's just, to me, that's not the written definition.
Yeah.
The written definition is 14 to 15 a week for a male, 7 to 8 for a female. And the other things with typical addictions is when they're seeking out that drug or substance, and they know it's harmful to themselves already, they know they could go over the edge, but they still seek it out, or they start missing work or social events because of it. They start having, you know, ailments, so to speak, that keep them from going to do those social events or family events or work events. Those are other red flags.
Well, what about binge drinkers? You know, people that drink 20 beers. I have patients. I may have an alcohol problem. How many beers you drink? I only drink on the weekends, but, you know, I have 24 beers. Or, you know, what about binge drinkers like that drink to get drunk?
So that's a really good point and a good question, because we're seeing a lot more of this nowadays, especially since the whole COVID experience. And those folks, to me, are one of the most dangerous, because they binge drink to a point where they actually will be hospitalized or can be hospitalized. They can actually comatose themselves. Mm-hmm. And I've had a good friend whose wife battled through this. She was a binge drinker. We were able to treat her. We treated her with actually Vivitrol injections that work great for binge drinkers, by the way.
Vivitrol.
Okay. Amazing. Almost everyone who's a binge drinker that we've treated, probably 8 out of 10 of those have gotten better with Vivitrol.
And that's interesting, because you can use some of the other medicines like naltrexone, which I use sometimes on people, but you're not sure if they're taking it, you know, or even Anabuse,
exactly,
which you'll feel like you want to die if you take that and drink.
Right.
But Vivitrol is interesting, because it's like a once a month injection, and you know they've gotten it. They come into your office,
yes,
and they get it.
That's exactly right. It's once a month, and you're exactly right. So we start out with, while we're getting folks set up who are binge drinkers, with the oral medications. And the risk is, hey, if I don't take it, I don't have to worry. I don't feel anything, you know? So, same thing with Anabuse, the old disulfiram, the medicine that makes you sick if you drink. Well, if you know your buddies are coming to town later, it's only obvious that you're smart enough to say, well, I'm not going to take my disulfiram or my Anabuse.
Yeah.
I'm going to just go about my business. So same with the other medications. And these are medications that they're not addictive. They don't make people high. We discussed the last episode stuff too. But this is, you can stop them whenever. But you're right. The Vivitrol injections, you get the injection every month. You come in and we work on your stability with groups, with, you know, counseling, other medications that will add to it a lot of times to help raise the serotonin levels, you know, in their brains to kind of help them get through that and give them good support. And so if we keep them in that program, they do amazing. They really do.
You know, I've always heard that there's three things that you absolutely need to do if you have an alcohol use disorder. One is rehab. You need to realize that you do have a problem, mm-hmm, and seek help for it. Number two, complete abstinence from it. Number three, ongoing, like a 12-step program, which is really a spiritual program.
Yeah, right. I agree. And there's a lot of good data on that. That's where it started. I think what AA started, or Alcohol Anonymous, started back in the 30s.
Yep.
And it's been, you know, two guys, a physician and another fellow in the community, started it. And it's produced, for sure. So good support is key. I think for the chronic drinkers, more so, they need more of an inpatient first. They need to get through the detoxing. Regardless of binger or a chronic drinker, they need to have that support when they come out. We can help them even in the outpatient setting after they get out of inpatient to make sure that they're going to keep that. We're going to keep them accountable. We're going to get them a counseling. We may stick them on a serotonin medication to kind of help increase serotonin in their minds. We may put them on a naltrexone or a Vivitrol or something like that to sort of help with any thoughts of it coming in the future, you know.
So with Vivitrol and naltrexone, you don't have a reaction if you drink. You just don't want to drink. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. You'll get less of an effect from the alcohol. It does bind up some of the, it's kind of like a partial agonist, and as we talked about last show. But it's more of a feeling of just good well-being. And it's not a high. It's not a high. So I want to make sure that's really clear to folks. I don't know. I just can't explain it. I just feel good, and I don't feel like I need anything. I can just be myself, you know? And there's a couple medicines that do that as well. There's another one we use as well, is FDA approved, that does the same thing. And it's an oral medicine, but again, you have to take it, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, we use a lot of low dose naltrexone in functional medicine for a lot of reasons. It's one of the great unknown secrets of medicine is low-dose naltrexone for
right.
many conditions, from sleep to weight loss to helping managing pain to mm-hmm. helping reverse some of the inflammation in autoimmune diseases. I mean, we use it a ton.
It's crazy.
It's safe. It's very safe.
Very safe. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've got personal experience with it. So it does work very well for all that stuff. And you know, knocking down inflammation is a key. You know.
Yeah. With alcohol disorder, again, you're going to use a higher, much higher dose mm-hmm. than they do with some of these things I've been saying. But go to my podcast on LDN and you can learn about that, because nice. It is a great, it's kind of like methylene blue. It's one of those things that most doctors have never even heard about that work unbelievably well because it's off label.
Yeah.
You know, so many things in medicine we do off label. But
right.
So this thing with alcoholism, so you're saying it's almost worse than, rather than being a daily drinker, it's almost worse to be a binge drinker.
Yeah. Sorry, I drifted a little bit from that, but that's exactly right, because they think, well, I'm just going to go and have a good time on the weekend, and they don't stop. And then they end up comatose or in the hospital or dead. And, you know, the person I mentioned earlier nearly died. And it was super scary for, you know, obviously for them, but the family especially. And so at that point, really, it helped them to realize, okay, I need to get some treatment and I need to do something. And they came in the program, and they're 4 years clean now. No binging, no drinking at all. Started out with, we did Vivitrol for about 8 months, and then kind of worked into just support alone and groups, and now just doing amazing.
So there's a lot of people out there with a problem that they don't know they have.
Right.
So those things you mentioned, those little tips about it, it seems like to me if you have somebody asking you about, do you have a drinking problem, family, spouse, whatever, you probably do.
Yep. Or you're questioning it yourself. Like, hey, I drank a little too much this weekend. If you're still doing that and you're, you know, you're an older person especially, that's a good sign that you're needing to get some.
When that happens, does that necessarily mean you need inpatient treatment or not?
No. We kind of discussed a little bit of this before, just briefly on the inpatient, outpatient. And again, there's inpatient works very well. For certain types of people, outpatient is probably just as good or better. And so if you're a binge drinker, those are the people that really aren't chronically needing to be away from it, because they don't have a problem during the week. They're like, I can stay away from it. I just know on the weekends I binge. Those are the ones that seem to do very well in the outpatient setting.
Are those people ever able to drink socially or not? I mean, or you just try to say, hey, you just can't drink.
It's the same process. Yep, you can't have it dangling in front of you,
yeah.
because
okay.
you're going to always want to get to that experience you get to on the weekend warrior, you know, time. You're going to want to go to that point, and you're not going to be able to stop. So you just have to keep it from dangling in front of you.
That's really interesting. It seems like in today's world, more young people are drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed that? I mean, it's just a thing. It's almost accepted everywhere.
It is.
And yet it's so dangerous, and people just don't realize it.
No, you're exactly right. It's and as we mentioned earlier, I think that's the scariest part of it, is it is accepted more. It's I remember growing up, and I wasn't really a big church goer when I grew up, but as I grew older into high school, I became a Christian, and the standard was you don't drink at all. It was just not in the churches. And
right.
now it's all through the churches, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, Jesus drank, and he did. You know, there was a different time, but
yeah.
but the fact of the matter is, it makes it more acceptable.
Yeah, and that can be dangerous. And a lot of times, you won't even know you have a problem, but you ought to think about it. You
mm-hmm.
know, just do a deep dive on it and do it. You know, if you want to change in your life, whether it's your personal life, your business, anything. There's three steps that I think you need to take. Number one, an honest assessment of where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
An honest assessment of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard for people to do.
Yeah.
Two, next step, where do you want to be? Or who do you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
And three, then you take some action steps on how to get there. But if you don't know who you are or who you want to be, you know, you're not going to be taking any steps to
Agree.
Get there. That's kind of like a New Year's resolution.
Yeah.
So take those three steps and A very wise guy told me that one time, and I always remembered it. And I talked to my patients about that, and I look at it that way with this business.
Yep.
You know, as well. I'm sure you have as well with
right.
your business. But so we'll wrap it up.
Yeah.
You, in your business, so you do a lot of addiction medicine, and you work with a lot of people with alcohol problems, right?
Right. Right. So yeah, we handle all substance use disorders. But alcohol definitely, because of how prevalent it is now, is becoming more of a problem. We're starting to see more and more of those folks coming to the program. So, and what's cool is that we're really seeing some great things change in their lives. We're really getting them back to, they really seem to grasp it once they come in and, you know, get into the whole program. You know,
and so. you said program, because it's not just here's your pill, here's your shot once a month. It's a whole program. You're looking at everything.
That's right.
And that's what's so different about you, and why that's what I send patients to.
Yeah.
In the future, you know, it's going to be incredible what you're doing. You're on a mission, and it's so appreciated by everybody.
Yeah.
And you're not doing this for
thank you
money or, you know, a job. You look at it as a mission, and that's why your job is so great.
That's right. It's probably like you think as well. As you know, I feel like it is a calling. It's a ministry. But you know what's really great about it is we're fulfilling a need that is, I feel, is so important, and we get paid to do it.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. And so I'm like, that's not a job, you
exactly
know.
Exactly
so,
right. That's why I'm 69 years old. I'll never retire.
It's amazing.
I just don't want to retire. Yeah. Why would I?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm more experienced than I've ever been. I love what I do.
Yeah.
And I don't want to retire and hang it up. I want to keep doing this and helping people out and just enjoying life.
Yeah, we don't want you to. We don't want you to. I know I don't. I'm a patient of yours, so I definitely don't want you to. We really have enjoyed your knowledge and how you also your calling to the community. And man, you certainly don't look 69, so yeah.
I don't believe it, I am.
You don't act it either, so that's good. Yeah,
well,
you get around pretty well, yeah.
Well, Dr. Chip Backus, thank you so much for coming on here again. We're going to give you his website and address and all that he does, and thank you so much, and we'll do this again.
Yes, thank you. I'd love to do it again. This has been a real blessing, a real treat. Thank you.
Thank
Thanks
you, Chip.
Thanks for what you do.
So we'll see you guys next week. Thank you. Mm-hmm.